football on off the ball.
You can flip it up and you can perceive how you want, but the truth is the truth, and I always try to be very truthful with players.
Join in the obsession. Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join.
Off the Ball's Breakfast Bite. A bite-sized serving of Ireland's breakfast sports show.
We were reflecting a little bit earlier on the news that had come through that Mick O'Dwyer had passed away, and I'm just reading Conor Neville's piece this morning. In 2009, 13-man Wicklow defeated Fermanagh in a round one qualifier, which meant Micko had beaten every county in the country over the course of his managerial career. It's not the thing that he's going to be the most remembered for, but it is testimony to the longevity of the man. And I'm delighted to say Kieran Donaghy joins us now to share some reflections. Kieran, good morning to you. How are you?
Morning, Ger. How are you?
For me as a Kildare supporter, Micko's time at Kildare is obviously the most important. I suspect from Kerry's perspective, if you were to write the history of Kerry football, there'd be multiple chapters that would be dedicated to Micko.
There would, yeah, no doubt. I think when he took that kind of team of youngsters almost to the All-Ireland in 75 was obviously a feat in itself, because Dublin were a juggernaut at the time. And Micko had his own way of playing, and it was very fast, quick football. And, that was an unbelievable All-Ireland to win. I think not too many at the time saw it coming. Obviously, we were brought up down in Kerry on the golden years, which was basically built around Micko and all those magical wins as a youngster, and we were all given that tape at an early age to watch and to learn from. So yeah, that chapter is probably a huge part in the Kerry football story over the last 150 years, for sure.
One of the things that strikes me about that team is that it's a team full of characters who all went on to have great careers as individuals and then to be standalone people as well. Micko wasn't an overbearing leader. He seemed to allow, so there was shape and there was discipline, and it was definitely Micko's set of rules, but within that people were allowed to express themselves and be individuals.
He was, yeah, and I think football at that time was a definitely more simple game, and it did allow players, you know, you were basically guaranteed that ball was going to be kicked anywhere near you if you were 50 or 60 yards away from it. So, it became, Micko obviously wanted a team that could, first of all, win its own ball, and probably the key component in that was getting the bomber in 77. You know, that was the one that kind of, you know, turned a good team that won one and lost two into that great team and what it was, because he was the kind of glue that brought all the class together around him. And I think that was probably one of his biggest things, was shifting 4 or 5 stone off the bomber in a winter blowing Waterville to get him to the level of where he was. And he was pretty much unmarkable for the rest of that period.
Hey, Kieran, there's Mick O'Dwyer with the CV and the honours list and what he did at all the counties he's involved in. But what was he like as a person away from everything that he achieved on the pitch?
He's definitely a rogue. I would have come across a good bit of him blowing Waterville. I would spend a lot of time down there in the summers when I was playing, and he was always a great character to bump into. And just a rogue behind it all. Like he was an outlier. Like he was, you know, he was fundraising before fundraising was a thing. He was bringing the team on holidays before it was overly a thing. He was, you know, always pushing the envelope with that. Like, as you said, like, he won everywhere he went. Do you know what I mean? Whether it was Laois first Leinster title, or it was, you know, Kildare getting to an All-Ireland final and winning Leinster titles, to obviously Kerry, you know, he won the Tommy Murphy with Wicklow, I'm almost sure, one year.
Yeah, he did.
Yeah, and he was, you know, he was just a winner. Like, he managed Railway Cups. He won 6, 7 or 8 Railway Cups, I think. You know, just anywhere he went, he won, and he always did it his own way. And by all accounts, and talking to the boys, it wasn't overly training wasn't a walk in the park by any stretch of the imagination. And the famous one about wanting to change the way they were training, and he put them running the laps a different way. But he obviously wanted a team that was in shape. He wanted a team that was in shape that could really go toe to toe with anybody. And you know, he and as a player, like, he was a brilliant player, and the adversity he came through as a player after breaking his legs to come back and play for Kerry and winning up more All Irelands. Just a remarkable sporting career, and even away from sport, you know, whatever he went at, whether it was mechanics or bars or hotels, or you know, he was just a guy that was driven for success for sure, and put that into every team that he was with.
This week on Diverted.
Do you pop saving? Do you do that or?
So when I return to Ireland, I will have €0.
This week we're going to Chile.
¿Hace poco aprendiste a hablar español?
Well, mi español es muy mal.
Es como el inglés mío.
Yeah.
We're going to be visiting the Palestinian football club in Santiago.
Here in Chile, there's the biggest colony of Palestine outside Palestine and outside the Middle East, yes.
And we'll also be telling you about a legendary pair of brothers who made it all the way to the World Rugby Hall of Fame for Chile. Coming every Tuesday to your podcast feed, wherever you get your podcasts.
Tune in and get diverted on Off the Ball.
We have Daniel Whiffen with us this morning. Daniel, good morning to you. How are you?
Morning. How are you?
What part of the world are you in?
I'm just in the UK. I'm just training in Loughborough at the moment.
And your next appearance in a pool is actually going to be in Ireland the week after next. Is that right?
Yeah, next Saturday will be my first race in Irish Open Championships. Well, our world champ trials, basically.
And in the papers today, there's talk about how you could have not come to Dublin to do this and tried to set a world record at the World Championships. And if you set a world record at the World Championships, you get cash money. But actually, you've decided to come and try and inspire the nation.
Yeah, I think it's more important to swim fast in Ireland. I haven't done it in a while. The last time I tapered for a race in Ireland was probably like Tokyo Olympic trials in 2021. So I was like, it's about time where I actually swim a fast time in Ireland. So I was like, why not swim at the trials against my brother and try have a crack at his world record.
Hi, Daniel. How's the how have the intervening months been since the Olympics? I always wonder this with athletes who perform so legendarily at the Olympics. It was like when the adrenaline wears off and everybody else goes about their business, what's the ratio of mentions of the Olympics to normal life now when you meet your nearest and dearest?
Yeah, it still gets mentioned every time I meet somebody. It's still definitely everybody talks about it still, but yeah, I mean, it's completely changed my life. I went on holiday for 2 months and took a big break. And I was people still coming up to me then, which I thought was weird because I was in the other side of the world.
Yeah.
And but no, it's calmed down a bit. I would say, like, at university, I don't have anybody pestering me about it. But I mean, if I go home to Ireland, I probably am still having the same issue of hour and a half minute stop at an apple green.
And how do you deal with that yourself? Are you happy to indulge those conversations with people, or do you want to move on?
To be fair, a lot of people just ask the same question, so I don't mind answering them, and they're not really, they don't like stop me for like that long, so I'm happy to talk to people if they ask the questions. But I have moved on mentally from the Olympics. Like, I'm fully set on world champs in the summer and trying to break as many world records on the way to LA, so that's what I'm focusing on.
I think you've put a number on those world records, isn't it? Is it 3 in the next 4 years?
Yeah, so, well, it's 4 total is what I want. And then, so I need to get 3 more.
And any idea the location of those world records?
Well, I'd like one to be in a week and a half.
Yep.
at least one. And then, I don't know, we'll have to see how, like, I don't want to be the person who just goes and breaks the world record and then never gets near the time again. I want to keep pushing it and pushing it and keep pushing the boundaries. So that's my goal for my swimming career, is to see how far I can push those boundaries.
Can I ask you about getting back in the pool after that 2 month break and having achieved so much in Paris? Was there a little bit of you that was like, oh, I can't believe I have to go back and do all again and start again? Or were you really excited by the fact that you've been away for 2 months?
Yeah, I think winning the bronze medal in the 1500 kind of actually like made me want to continue swimming and go even faster, because obviously my goal was to try and win as many gold medals as possible, and we came away with a gold and the bronze. And I think the 1500 like kind of inspired me that I want to go even faster and I need to train even harder. So then when I came back to training, I maybe had like a little blip on the first week, because I think my coach gave me like a couple 2000 meter straight swims in the first week, and I was like, oh, I don't know if I could do that today, I'm just back. And but we built into like the season pretty nicely, and now I'm just trying to go faster than ever. And to be honest, I haven't really looked back since I took my break.
To listen to this morning's Off the Ball Breakfast in full, become a member at offtheball.com/join now.